We've been through a lot as a congregation in this last while. Specifically, Aaron and I were invited or disinvited from the previous fellowship by the leadership because we were gay and because we loved each other and wanted to live a life of love together. And other people here left. Our pastor, Colin, was forced out because he wouldn't do things like tell us we had to go, and he wouldn't do things like follow the dictates of leadership, instead wanting to follow his heart and where this heart was leading him and us. And everybody here took their own choice to come together in this new endeavor that we call The Edge. And we all came not knowing, first of all, what would happen. I don't think any of us really, really, really understood the cost, individually and the cost collectively. The loss, the hurt, the grief, the uncertainty. And yet, through it all, I know that God was with us. He always is. God always is with us. So I wanted to share a sermon or a message that was uplifting, that was positive, that took us back to our foundations, and that also gave us room to open our hearts, to forgive ourselves, to forgive each other, and most of all, to love. So I call this the simplicity of the gospel. A baby is born but dies in childbirth. Will that child enter into the kingdom of heaven? An adult is born and lives out their long life on a remote island far from the reaches of modern civilization. This person never sets eyes on the scriptures and never hears of Christ. When that person dies, will they find their way into the kingdom of heaven? These were some of the questions that troubled me during my teenage years. And I asked people, and people with religious training offered me answers to these questions, unsatisfactory answers, I might say, but answers nonetheless. The Catholics told me if the baby's baptized with water by a priest, its soul will enter into the kingdom of heaven. And what if not? If they're not baptized, well, perhaps purgatory. The Pentecostals and the Evangelicals said if an adult has never accepted Christ into their heart, then they cannot be saved. That's the reason we're called to evangelize and spread the gospel to the four corners of the earth. They also believe the babies are safe until the age of accountability, around age 8, when they're able to accept God for themselves and be baptized. So each of these denominations had their own beliefs and explanations, but they differed. I was personally baptized by the Pentecostals, but the Catholics later determined that baptism to be insufficient, and they said if I wanted to worship with them, I'd have to be rebaptized with the right one, in the right way. The Pentecostals would have said the same if I'd come to them having been baptized as an infant by the Catholics. Confused by their answers and knowing there was only one truth, I turned inwardly to God, who I believed could answer my questions. So I've titled my presentation today, The Simplicity of the Gospel. First, I'm going to talk about the complexity of the Old Testament and its meaning for a New Testament world. I'll talk about the complexity of religion as human beings have constructed today, the overclothing of the pure religion. And finally, I'll talk about what I see as the simplicity of the gospel. So the Old Testament, I call it messages in a time capsule. The Old Testament prepared the way for Christ by making manifest to us the outward things that held the promise of the inward reality, the outward physical form actually being a shadow or representation of the spiritual substance. The temple worship, the ceremonies, the readings from the scriptures, the laws on stone tablets, the animal sacrifices, the prophets, the priests, the chosen people. All of these were physical forms, visible and outward symbols of the inward and spiritual truth. And when Christ arrived, I believe he came to fulfill the promises of the Old Testament and to reveal the truth underneath the outward signs and the outward ways. In doing so, he ended the outward worship so that we could come to the underlying truth and approach God with Christ. Christ promised to take us directly to God. No intermediary. No more exclusive chosen people from the 12 tribes of Israel, but now all God's children called and chosen. Leave no one behind, cries Christ. He spoke of this twice in the Gospel of John. While I was with them in the world, I kept them in your name. He was praying to the Father when he said this. Those whom you gave to me, I have kept, and none of them is lost. That the saying might be fulfilled, which he spoke, of all of those whom you gave me, I have lost none. So Christ said this twice. So who would God give to him? Some of us or all of us? No more human priests, no more human judges, no more blood sacrifices, no more stone tablets, no more need for temple worship. For Christ had come in the line of Melchizedek as the one priest above all. And this is from Hebrews and Psalms. The Lord has sworn and will not relent. You are a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. So this is talking about Christ, the priest, one priest forever and for always. For such a high priest was fitting for us, who is holy, harmless, undefiled, separate from sinners, and has become higher than the heavens, who does not need daily, as those high priests did, to offer up sacrifices, first for his own sins and then for the people's. For this he did once and for all when he offered up himself. For the law appoints as high priests men who have weakness, but the word of the oath which came after the law appoints the Son who has been perfected forever. So those priests, all of those priests that came beforehand were a shadow of the true priest, Christ. The curtain of the temple was torn in half, and now through Christ we may all approach God directly. After all, he is our spiritual father, and we are his children. Christ, our brother, leads the way, revealing the way for us to walk in. Brother as in brother in the flesh. When I was younger, I worshipped with the Catholics, and in my life I've attended worship services with the Eastern Orthodox, the Anglicans. All have elaborate ceremonies and rituals, a male priesthood, complex hierarchies, as well as incredible costumes worn by the leaders to set themselves apart. The burgeoning choirs, the daily communion, the mass, the remembrance of the saints who have gone before us, the pomp, the beauty, the incense and candles, the elaborate cathedrals and worship buildings hinting at the glories of heaven, all unnecessary and yet somehow memorable, uplifting, and reassuring, with the potential to be spirit-filled, but all shadows in their outward form. I've also worshipped with many Protestant denominations at one time or another, ranging from the enthusiastic worship of the Baptists, the unfettered charismatic worship of the Pentecostals, the restrained worship of the Mennonites, the Lutherans, the Mormons, the Methodists, and the emerging forms of worship seen in the Unitarians and the United Church. As different as these denominations were in many respects, they were also similar and predictable. Their similarities come down from Constantine, who introduced worship in church buildings, sermons, and choirs. Reading from scriptures harken back to the Jewish temple. The order of service, which comes down to us from John Calvin in the 1600s, two songs, a prayer, two more songs, an offering, another prayer, a solo or a special music from the choir, a sermon, and the benediction. Some had fixed times to worship, taking an hour, while others were more extended. Each believed that its own flavor of worship was the best. I've also worshipped with the Quakers, who in an attempt to worship as the early Christians did, discarded the clergy, believing and trusting that God could call anyone to speak a word. Also that God could speak to everyone's heart in the silence of worship if God wished. The Quakers also discarded the ceremonial, trying to do away with the outward forms of worship so that they could draw near to the inward worship in spirit and truth. As Christ himself said, but the hour is coming and now is when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For the Father is seeking such to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth. And one of the early Quakers, William Penn, who was a founding father of the United States of America, said, "This world is a form, our bodies are forms, and no visible act of devotion can be without forms. But yes, yet, the less form in religion, the better, since God is a spirit, for the more mental our worship," by mental he meant something bigger than just the mind, the thinking, "the more mental our worship, the more adequate to the nature of God, the more silent, the more suitable to the language of a spirit." He said that in 1693. Despite the desire to worship in spirit and truth, William Penn recognized the limitations of the human being in that our spirit is housed in a physical body for a time and experiences the limitations of that physical vessel. The soul wears the body like the body wears the clothes. Once we have taken away the unnecessary aspects of Christianity, the overclothing of religion, what remains? What is at the core? Which brings me to the heart of my message today, the simplicity of the gospel. What is the gospel? It translates as good news, which comes from the Greek word messenger. What is the good news? The good news is that Christ has come to save the world himself. How are we saved? We're saved by grace. What is grace? Grace is God's love reaching ever and always, reaching out to us. How do we receive this grace? We receive this grace by faith. What then is faith? Faith is our soul opening itself to receive God, our spirit within turning toward and reaching toward God, desiring God, and ultimately receiving God. But how do we gain this faith? From God, the giver of all good. He gives us faith to desire him and faith to trust in him. This faith is likened by Christ to a mustard seed. The seed is our soul, which resides within our human body. It was placed into us when God sent us down to earth to have a chance at this life in flesh and blood. This faith is God himself, God's essence within us, which is always striving toward God, calling out to God, and receiving God. Faith is God's essence within us, longing for a return to God's presence, inviting God's living spirit to come and reside with us, to flow through us, and importantly, to transform us. So when I see the children here today, we have four little ones. We were all little ones ourselves not long ago, and in some senses we're all still little ones in the eyes of God. I'm reminded that they come into this world, as a poet said, we come into this world trailing clouds of glory. Christ's message is, I have come to save my people myself, to deliver them into my inward spiritual kingdom, which is not of this world. The heart of religion. As complex and varied as Christian religions have become, the heart of them all is the same. Salvation by God's grace through his living spirit. This religion of spirit and truth manifests itself in us by love. True and unfettered love. It calls to us, it comes to us, it gives to us, it fills us. God desires us to give it away to others freely, just as we have received it. And that love has been likened to light, the light of the world. This spiritual flow of love is the light of God going out into the world. The light in the physical universe is an outward manifestation that symbolizes the true spiritual light, so the light that we see coming from the sun or from light bulbs. Science has discovered that light exists as both physical particles and as energy. And the magical thing is, as it travels in spirals through the universe, it transforms itself repeatedly from particle, which has physical form in weight and substance, and back into pure energy, and then back again. It makes this transformation over and over and over again. This physical energy can be calculated as E equals mc squared, or 670 million miles per hour times itself, 670 million times 670 million times the mass of a particle. This represents the physical, which is a phenomenal amount of energy. Of course, the spiritual energy is even greater. Think of the physical energy that we embody within ourselves through our mass. It's unfathomable, and yet the spiritual energy is greater. In our truest form, we are spirit, the children of light, who go out as light into the world. And we can shine with that energy of light and love out into our families, our communities, even out into the universe. Every good deed, every good thought, every prayer goes out into the world and the universe like a ray of light called forth by God in truth and in power. Just as light is a physical and an energetic form, so does love. Love took on flesh and walked among us in the form of Christ. Love still takes on flesh and walks among us in you. Any of us who will listen to the call of Spirit and answer that call with, "Here I am, Lord, choose me, send me." Any of us, "Whom shall I send and who will go for us?" Then I said, "Here I am, Lord, send me." The simplicity of the gospel, spirit, truth, love. Love for God, love for God's people, all of them, and love for God's creation. God said, "I will love, and so can you." So what of the baby who dies in childbirth, and what of the adult who never read the scripture? There's no need for scriptures, no need for water baptism, no need for thought, for emotion, for any outward physical sign or ceremony, only a need for love. We are all conceived in love, born of love, and from that moment, we long to be immersed in love and to become love itself. And whenever we love in spirit and in truth, we join together with the universal church of those who love God and those who love the seed of God that resides in all others. Those children of love who come forth from every nation, every class, every creed, every outward religion, every gender, every age, every color. William Penn spoke of this in 1693 when he said, "The humble, meek, merciful, just, pious and devout souls are everywhere of one religion. And when death has taken off the mask, they will know one another, though the diverse liveries or clothing that they wear here makes them strangers." The simplicity of the gospel, the good news of Christ's salvation by love, his love transforming us into love embodied. I'd like to end with a song. It's a pop song. I once sung a pop song before from the front. Some people were pleased with it, and some people weren't. This one I think is remarkable to me. It's considered one of the best pop songs of all time. It is simple. This is not complex. This is not going to win you any Nobel Prizes for the lyrics. And yet, there's something beautiful about it that made it a best-selling song, one of the best-selling of all time. It's written by performed by a band called the Five Stair Steps, a group from the United States, and it's called "Ooh, Child." "Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Someday we'll put it together and we'll get it all done. Someday when your head is much lighter. Someday we'll walk in the rays of a beautiful sun. Someday when the world is much brighter. Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Someday we'll put it together and we'll get it all done. Someday when your head is much lighter. Someday, yeah, we'll walk in the rays of a beautiful sun. Someday when the world's much brighter. Right now, right now, right now, right now, right now, right now. You just wait and see how things are gonna be. You just wait and see how things are gonna be. Yeah, you just wait and see how things are gonna be. You just wait and see how things are gonna be. You just wait and see how things are gonna be. You just wait and see how things are gonna be right now. You just wait and see right now how things are gonna be right now. You just wait and see right now how things are gonna be right now. Right now. Right now.